The reading is Home by Warren Shire, who's a British Somali poet. No one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark. You only run for the border when you see the whole city running as well. Your neighbor is running faster than you. The boy you went to school with who kissed you dizzy behind the old tin factory is holding a gun bigger than his body. You only leave home when home won't let you stay. No one would leave home unless home chased you. Fire under feet, hot blood in your belly. You have to understand, no one puts their children in a boat unless the water is safer than the land. Who would choose to spend days and nights in the stomach of a truck unless the miles traveled meant something more than a journey? Who would choose to crawl under fences, be beaten until your shadow leaves you, raped and drowned, forced to the bottom of the boat because you are darker, be sold, starved, shot at the border like a sick animal, be pitied, lose your name, lose your family, make a refuge camp, a home for a year or two or ten, stripped and searched, find prison anywhere? And if you survive, you are treated on the other side with go home. Refugees, dirty immigrants, asylum seekers, sucking our country dry, milk dark, with their hands out, smell strange, savage. Look what they've done in their own countries. What will they do to ours? The dirty looks in the street, softer than a limb torn off. The indignity of everyday life, more tender than 14 men who look like your father between your legs. Insults easier to swallow than rubble, than your child's body in pieces. For now, forget about pride. Your survival is more important. I want to go home, but home is the mouth of a shark. Home is the barrel of a gun, and no one would leave home unless home chased you to the shore, unless home tells you to leave what you could not behind, even if it was human. No one leaves home until home is a damp voice in your ear saying, leave, run now. I don't know what I've become. I read that because Linda felt she couldn't. And I have to have a little pause, too. So why do Guatemalans leave? Why do they leave this country of beautiful vistas, stunning volcanoes, ancient traditions dating back to Mayans, a country with a culture that values family and close village connection? It's a country, a people, and a culture that Linda and I have grown to love and admire. To quote our reading, no one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark. But Guatemalans are leaving in increasing numbers for El Norte. In 2018 and 2019, data from U.S. Border Control shows a massive increase in Guatemalan migrants, particularly families and unaccompanied minors. In the first 4 months of 2019, the number of Guatemalans detained at the U.S. border amounted to 1% of the total population of the country. 1% of the total population in 4 months. A poll by Guatemalan newspaper Prensa Libre reports that 1 in 3 Guatemalans would like to immigrate to the United States. So, what are the reasons? Some of the reasons for migration is violence. Guatemala underwent a 30-year violent civil war, ending only as recently as 1996. Guatemalans even now refer to that period as la violencia, the violence. And let's not forget that our country was at the heart of that, with our government fearing that land reform would harm the interests of American companies like United Fruit, and maybe even worse, that our present government continues to influence and support the Guatemalan government in its oppressive and corrupt regime. But violence against the indigenous Mayan population was rampant by government troops during the war. In the Ixchel region of Guatemala, an area of mostly indigenous residents, the army carried out more than 100 massacres during that time. Unofficial estimates put the toll of dead and disappeared at more than 20,000. Persons suspected of working for the guerrillas suffered from torture, disfigurement, and public execution. Guerrillas were violent as well, executing landowners, threatening reprisals of residents if they supported the rebels. So whether they were warring on the side of the government or warring on the side of the guerrillas, war was the occupation of most males during that 30-year period. A country doesn't heal quickly from that violent history. In Guatemala City, gangs and organized crimes can rule a neighborhood. In villages, extreme poverty can lead to robber gangs. In Honduras, and especially El Salvador, gang violence is the major reason for fleeing that country. It's a factor in Guatemala, but increasingly, recently, poverty and hunger are the primary reasons, the primary drivers to leave the country. The mouth of the shark is now abject poverty and hunger. In a study by the UN World Food Program, the main cause of Guatemalans leaving is now drought and its consequences. No food, no money, no work. This year in Guatemala, during a leadership workshop that Linda and I were giving, we met a young man working for a project jointly run by Catholic Relief Services and USAID. He described the disastrous drought that has hit the northern part of the country and its consequences on the mostly indigenous populations. He later sent us a report that we asked him for on food insecurity in that region, and the report was done by USAID Catholic Relief Services. So to quote the opening sentence of this report, the lack of rainfall and prolonged dry spells in the dry quarter of Guatemala in 2018 has affected the production of corn and beans, leading to reported crop losses among 300,000 primarily subsistence farmers in that region. This kind of, not to have a pun, but dry, objective statement doesn't begin to describe, though, the effect that the dry has on families, the effect on their poverty, on their hunger. This stat does a better job, I think. Corn and bean production in 2018 provided about 2 months of food intake in that region. 2 months. In previous years, families affected by a bad harvest could work as day laborers on commercial farms, but increasingly there is no work to be found. Even large-scale commercial ventures have been affected by this drought, like coffee farms. So is human-induced climate change to blame for these conditions? Well, a leading Guatemalan scientist on climate change states, we still have some ways to go to scientifically prove that what we are seeing now is outside the norm. But if you go to the fields, everybody says no. The coping mechanisms for Guatemalans in this region include foraging and also relying on the limited aid that programs like USAID Catholic Relief Services provide. But it's a dire situation for these families. Very unfortunately, some resort to violence, which goes against the strong bonds in these communities. A community leader is quoted as saying, people from our own community go out and rob our own people because they feel it's the only option. Another option, of course, is migration. The same community leader goes on to say, a lot of people are leaving, many more than before, toward the U.S. in search of a new future, taking their small children with them because they feel pressure to risk it all. Even the areas of Guatemala that are not experiencing this drought, many feel hopeless, are poorly educated, and don't see a future for their children. Families that are struggling in extreme poverty see people that have returned from the U.S. or receiving remittances from the U.S. building a new house that is better than anything they could ever imagine. And then I've seen these houses as we travel through the north part of the country. They're in stark contrast to the ones surrounding them. They're called dollar houses. This year we spoke to a worker at an organization in the Ishiel indigenous region of northern Guatemala. We met her in a newly established, brightly lit, colorfully decorated library. She was describing her wonderful work with youth there and the programs to keep youth from leaving this traditional town. With all these programs, it was still very difficult for her to instill enough hope in their future to convince them to stay.
This is Guatemala. Some call this a third world country. Maybe that's true. But we just call it home. This is a place without hope, a place without dreams. But those people are wrong. We live here. We know better. We see our dreams for the future. Our spirits are bright. Our hope is strong. Our dreams are real. You can see it in our smiles. Need a chance to show the world what we can do. And through common hope, you can help give us that chance.
Why do Guatemalans stay? It's their home. As you can see in the video, they love their country and want it to be respected in the world. But to do that, they need a level of education that is far above what they have at the moment. For families living in abject poverty, education quickly takes a back seat to providing the basic necessities for their families. It's hard to see the value of your child finishing sixth grade when they can instead be an extra hand in the fields, or earning money shining shoes in the Parque Central. In Guatemala, the average number of completed years of education for adults is 3.5 years. Only 70% of children graduate from sixth grade, 32% from junior high, and a mere 18.6% from high school. Unfortunately, the Guatemalan government has not made education a priority. Their spending on education is one of the lowest in the world. You will hear that education is free, but students need to provide their own supplies, books, uniforms, transportation, and other fees that put this free education out of the reach of poor families. You will hear that it is compulsory, but 30% of students fail the test given at the end of first grade, which keeps them from being able to proceed. Many classrooms nationwide, especially in rural Guatemala, do not meet minimum standards for classroom space, teaching materials, classroom equipment and furniture, and water and sanitation. And of course, the indigenous areas are the worst off. Until a few years ago, you could be a teacher with a high school diploma. And the majority of the teachers in the system still have those minimal qualifications. In answer to this crying need, a large number of NGOs, both large and small, national and local, have stepped in to try to fill the gap that the government is leaving. The organization that we are familiar with, Common Hope, is the oldest and largest in the Antigua area. So I'd like to talk about Common Hope as an example of how committed people, both North Americans and local Guatemalans, are working to help Guatemalans stay. Many of the Guatemalans who we have worked with at Common Hope have pulled themselves up from poverty themselves and are now giving back to their country, who are total inspirations to us. Common Hope was established in 1986 by Dave and Betty Herbst, two Minnesotans who had lived in Guatemala and saw the needs. They were both staunch Catholics, but believed that, unlike many of the other NGOs, Common Hope should not be a religious organization. They have a spirituality statement that reflects this and is a big reason that we choose this organization to work with. The spirituality statement reads, "Common Hope welcomes anyone willing to serve the poor, and we serve those living in poverty without regard to religion. We honor all beliefs that lead people to health. We embrace spiritual values such as hope, forgiveness, compassion, respect, love, service, and the pursuit of peace. Common Hope recognizes that people, whatever their beliefs, are equal and deserve respect. We value the strength that diversity offers and acknowledge that we are all connected." Sounds kind of you. Their model is the other thing that sold us on Common Hope. The majority of their funding is from child sponsorship. Liliana, who Jack talked about, In Time for All Ages, is our sponsored child. And actually, the scenes that you saw in the very beginning of the film, the video, are of San Rafael, which is the village that Jack was talking about, where Liliana lives. We pay a monthly fee, exchange letters and pictures, and get to visit with her and her family when we're in Guatemala. The Common Hope model is that when a child is sponsored, the entire family gets the benefits, not only for education for their children, but the use of Common Hope's medical clinic, social workers, lawyers, and the ability to work sweat equity hours toward a cement-floored house, thus establishing a value to education that illiterate parents who never finished sixth grade did not previously have. The tough love part of the model is that the agreement is that the parents keep the children in school and commit to their education. If the parents need to pull the children out of school, the relationship is broken. Common Hope had their first high school graduate in 1996. She is now the IT manager at Common Hope. Common Hope has since then graduated over 2,000 students. The students graduate at 3 to 4 times the national average. In 2010, Common Hope determined to address the quality of the education their sponsored children were getting, and went deeper into their relationship with the schools that Common Hope students attend. Through these deeper relationships, Common Hope makes an even greater impact. They're able to influence the quality and value of education, and ultimately the likelihood of students graduating. It has proven to be a way for Common Hope to help entire schools, teachers, and the country's Ministry of Education. So how can we get involved with Common Hope's work helping Guatemalans stay in their country? One step is to sponsor a child. For a monthly fee, you get a relationship with a Guatemalan child and the chance to make a difference in a family's lives. Another step is to go on a vision team. Common Hope hosts groups of volunteers, usually from churches, families, or companies, to come to Antigua for a week and work with Common Hope and learn the issues firsthand. Vision team members will build a house for a family during the week and also make visits to families with social workers, help with after-school activities held at the Common Hope campus, or design their own activities for preschoolers, students, or moms. As you can probably tell, we're huge proponents of Common Hope. I could talk for hours about it, but I'm going to stop here. And anyone who is interested, we may have time for a few questions, or you can catch up with us at the social justice table. And speaking of the social justice table, we have a two-minute action today. You can pick up one of these and a couple of the other informative sheets. The two-minute action is to prepare to bear witness to injustice. There's two very quick things you can do. First of all, put the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition hotline number on your phone. And if you pick this up, you'll get the number. If you are a witness to any kind of activities of ICE in the neighborhood, you can call that number immediately. It's staffed 24 hours a day. Also, if you have a smartphone, you can go to your app store and download ACLU's Mobile Justice Oregon app, so that if you are a witness to any kind of ICE activity involving immigrants, you can record audio and video on this app. And even if something happened to your phone, that it immediately downloads the app to ACLU offices. So these are two things to do to be prepared. Maybe it won't ever happen to you, but if it does happen, you will be prepared to bear witness to injustices.
Thank you, Jack.
Thanks for this really informative talk today. You know, it's all kind of a mystery. If you just pay attention to the primary media as to what's happening, why are these people at our border, and especially those people who are inclined to view them as being suspicious or freeloaders or whatever, they have no idea about the kinds of things that you brought to us this morning. I had a specific question. You were talking about food insecurity, and especially in the northern areas of Guatemala. At the same time, we're paying farmers to keep them afloat because we're in a trade war with China. And it's been suggested that maybe those farmers could be providing food to the parts of the world where they need it, specifically Guatemala, where we seem to have a grudge.
Well, again, there are USAID programs that, again, that kind of I mentioned, and we met this person that was working with that. And frankly, I think that's probably a better way of supporting with food support rather than money, because the government is corrupt. And, you know, some of the things that is said about the Guatemalan government is true. So this particular program, USAID, with Catholic Services, seemed like it was a good way of providing both cash and money directly to those people. But yeah, it is kind of ironic or something that we have all this extra food, and it sounds like it would be a good way to use it. Thanks, John.
I want to thank you for being willing to do something that continued over 10 years. I have been to Guatemala twice, but failed to keep on going like that, so I really appreciate that. And I want to reinforce both the corrupt government and the needs of the people. On one of my delegations, we met with like women in a small village that we had to go down a steep canyon and up again to get to, who were orphans because their parents, their fathers and brothers and such had been killed during those war years. And they were trying to develop a credit, one of those Grameen type credit things. And I scholarshiped a young woman for 3 years to get her teaching credential, because even though the law said they should be taught in their home language, they weren't. And that's what she wanted to do. So we got her there, hopefully. The other delegation was to meet, an international delegation, to meet with the two women's shelters in the country, because women were being murdered and the corrupt government was not really investigating those murders, and they wanted an international viewpoint on that. And the thing that's missing, though, is that often we don't talk about U.S. participation, like in the 53 assassination of a democratically elected president and the ongoing kinds of things. So that was part of my revelation, is hearing about the things that we have done as a country that contributed to the situation that then leads to their coming across our border and our screaming about they should stay home. And we don't talk about what we as a government have done to help set up that situation. So between their corrupt government and our government assistance in that, they're caught in the middle there. So I really do appreciate your ongoing efforts.
Yeah, the U.S. is still being obstructionist in a lot of the things that the Guatemalan government has ever tried to do. There's a U.N. kind of Truth and Reconciliation Committee called CICIG. That's the acronym for the Spanish version of it. I'm not sure what it is. But the U.S. government was instrumental with Jimmy Morales, the president, has kicked CICIG out because it was getting too close to him. And the U.S. government has been complicit with supporting Morales against the U.N. fact-finding. So we continue after the present day.
Could you talk a little bit more about Antigua, which I assume is a city and not mm-hmm. the island in the Caribbean?
It's not, yeah, it is not the island in the Caribbean. Yeah, it's a city about an hour and a half from Guatemala City. It's a lovely, lovely city. If you ever go as a tourist, you will probably go to Antigua. It's an old colonial city. It's very nice. Common Hope has their offices and campus outside Antigua, and we usually stay in Antigua when we go down there as a volunteer. Antigua is a fairly prosperous city. A lot of Guatemalan people from Guatemala City come to Antigua to have summer homes in Antigua or come for the weekend. But the villages, there's many, many villages surrounding Antigua where the poverty is, where the people who work in the restaurants or the hotels have to live outside in the small towns. And also, Common Hope also supports a few villages that are further away, which are more indigenous villages, where it's more an agricultural base of for the economy. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
I had the opportunity to visit Guatemala and El Salvador and part of Honduras, and I just wanted to say that my daughter and her husband volunteered in Central America for 2 years in another organization that's also helping with education. What they do is they take groups down in the summertime and holidays, mostly student groups who help to actually build schools, because in these outlying villages there often aren't schools. And the volunteers build schools out of concrete blocks, and they lay a concrete floor and a tin roof, and they don't need windows, just doors, because it's so hot down there. And they also support students that are on scholarships so that they can keep on going to school. They're not active in Guatemala anymore because they were a group that was down there was robbed at gunpoint at one time on a bus, so they withdrew from Guatemala, but they are active still in El Salvador and Nicaragua and Honduras, and it's called Seeds of Learning. So there are lots of organizations that are actually trying to alleviate the ignorance and lack of education that exists, and furthering education so that people can advance. And it's successful when it exists, both for this organization and the one that I know of.
Well, thank you again. And please, let's continue this